Welcome to the Baseball America Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk baseball.
Hey, welcome everyone to Baseball America Facebook Live and a podcast. I'm John Manuel along with J.J. Cooper. I want to thank you for tuning in. Remind you that our podcast and Facebook Live broadcast are sponsored by Baseballism, the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. If you're a baseball fan, you need to check out Baseballism.com or visit the retail locations in Cooperstown, New York, Scottsdale, Arizona, or new stores in Atlanta and Chicago. Visit Baseballism.com and enter the code BA2017 to save 20% off at Baseballism.com. So, JJ, busy time of year for us.
Busy.
We're making sure we want to get in our Facebook Lives, get in our podcasts. We are locked down in draft mode. And that's what we wanted to talk a little bit today. But we also have a top 200 draft prospects, a top 100 minor league prospect update that we have not done before. We did it in May for the first time. You know, it was a big deal for us a few years ago. We did a midseason update. You used to just do the top 100 and freeze it in amber. You know, and then I walked around with it on the end of my cane, you know, like in Jurassic Park at the end of throughout the movie. But now we've decided to thaw that out and create a new dinosaur in the middle of May.
To be honest, I'm pretty excited about it. Now, to explain it to everyone, we try to spell this out. This has less movement. You're going to see a lot more movement when we come up with the midseason list, which will come out right around the Futures game, a little bit before the Futures game.
Right. We want to respect the integrity of our earlier list and also just the reporting that we did that went into that earlier list and not overreact to a month of minor league baseball.
Right. This list was based off of essentially 1 month. And so with that, we had some guys who graduated. The guys who graduated, you're gone.
That's really the main thing. Let's get rid of these guys who were like Gator Benintendi and
Dansby Swanson,
who were close.
Aaron Judge.
Exactly.
He's done pretty well for himself.
He has.
But so we graduated those guys. But then beyond that, we also did move guys around and reflect the reporting we have. Because it's a month of the season, but it's at... In many ways, it's 2 months, 2.5 months of information.
Right.
Because spring training does count also.
And there's some information there.
Right.
You don't want to judge too much
off
that. You don't want
to go crazy.
Yep.
But you do at the same time, you want to also reflect that there is some stuff that goes on there.
Right.
You know? And so we put all that together, and then that gives you the list that you have now. You know, the Yoan Moncada moves from 2 all the way up to 1.
Right.
Probably not a big surprise there, but there were some guys who made some significant movement. And again, you don't want to overreact, but one guy that jumps to mind to me was Luis Urias, who we had really good reports on coming out of the Cal League last year.
But Kyle Glazer special. Kyle's all over that.
Kyle's
guy.
All over Luis Urias. But coming out of last year, there still were the questions of, okay, impact, power, defensive position, he's a second baseman, you know, and kind of, okay, so he's on the cusp, but he's not in the 100. Well, then he goes out as the youngest player in the Texas League, and he's hitting for average.
Correct.
He's hitting for power.
Correct.
He's playing shortstop.
Correct.
And he's probably not a shortstop long term, but that does...
He's playing it to a passable level
he's
now.
He's playing it to a passable level at shortstop, which does show you... It's important also from the standpoint of just down the road. It gives him some more avenues, not as an everyday shortstop. But if you're a second baseman who can even slide over there,
right,
there's some value to that.
Also, just the fact that you're playing shortstop... Whether you play shortstop in the future or not, if you can play shortstop in AA, you know, and play it passably, that probably means you can be an above-average defender at second base. Well, the point is, it looks like he's going to be an asset both ways, not just a singles-hitting middle infield, maybe a singles-hitting second baseman. There's some versatility. There's a little bit more athleticism than I think he was given credit for, and the bat looks for real for sure. So that's a good guy to move in. The interesting part, really the big picture, and I should have given you this in prep, JJ, and I did not.
That's okay.
But as we did this in the room over yonder in our conference room, we noticed, there really aren't a lot of pitchers that we like on this list. Is this just ebb and flow, or is this just where the game is right now, where it is harder and harder to be a big league starting pitcher because you throw harder and harder, and I think it's harder, more difficult to remain healthy as a starter when every starting pitcher throws every pitch basically at max effort because that's how you're scouted. That's how, this evolution of pitching, there's anecdotal evidence here in the fact that the only pitchers we have in the top 20 are injured Alex Reyes, Francis Martez, who's backed up a little bit this spring, mm-hmm. not throwing a lot of strikes, and young Mitch Keller, who we like a lot. But those are the only guys in the top 21 for pitchers. I feel like it is more difficult to develop starting pitching in today's game because every pitcher is expected to throw 93 miles an hour plus. I don't feel that's conducive to throwing that kind of effort, that hard, that max effort, to be a starting pitcher and to throw 180 innings. And I feel like it's harder. I think we're seeing evidence of that in the minor leagues in developing starting pitchers. What's your retort? Because I know you disagree.
Yeah, my retort to that would be I do think in the midseason list we will see the guys who really have jumped out this year so far are guys, the guys who've been good are guys who were not close enough to that top 20. Really what happened is if you look at our preseason top 100, all the pitchers, and I would say...
Who's a guy who's jumped up?
Colby Allard.
Colby Allard already had a back issue, and he doesn't throw 93. Next.
What do you mean he doesn't throw?
He doesn't throw consistently 93 miles an hour.
You'll see a lot of 93s.
You'll see some, but that's not where he sits. Okay. He's not a velo guy the way you define it. You would define his velocity as below average major league velocity.
Actually, no.
It's like 91, 92, and you said 93 is below average.
No, like average. A lefty, a 92 mile an hour lefty is an average lefty.
Okay, I'm Nick, he's average.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, next.
So he's one.
I'll give it to you, but I don't think of him as a power pitcher. Anyway, move on.
Okay. Keller, like we talked about, I think Keller right now, if you wanted to make a case...
He's moved up four spots.
Right, but if you wanted to make a case to me at the midseason, I would not be shocked at all if Mitch Keller is in the top 10 on this list.
I agree.
Because he's okay. And he has about...
We liked them beforehand.
Right. Let me look.
Franklin Perez has thrown 14 innings this year.
Yeah.
That's
a jump up guy.
Mike Soroka is not a power pitcher. He's a jump up guy on our list, but he's not a power pitcher. He's a command guy. I want to know who of these guys are going to be starters. Tristan McKenzie. There's projection like crazy, and he's got good stuff now. Do you think at 6'5", 165 on a heavy day that he's going to sustain that for 180 to 200 innings in the big leagues? I think that's a little leap of faith to say that he will do that because we don't see anyone do that in the major leagues today.
It's hard.
It's hard. It's really hard. That's the point. The guys I'm most excited about who are the pitchers on here are all the guys in low A who haven't had a chance to fail yet. Ian Anderson, I was very excited about. Josh Norris's, we talked about it last week, report on Braxton Garrett.
Brandon Woodruff
is a good example. That's a good example. You had to dig.
I had to call the list up. But Brandon Woodruff is a guy who's
pitching really well
in AAA. Really good stuff. A guy who's not on this list, but I expect to see him in the midseason. Again, we're not going to move a guy from a little further off because Tyler Mahle was a little further off.
Tyler Mahle
is a guy who is dominating with plus stuff.
Didn't throw hard. Had a below average fastball velocity when he was drafted.
Mm-hmm.
87-91. You would call that guy a soft tosser in the draft.
But now he throws that.
Okay, but in the draft, you would call him a soft tosser. I'm just pricking some holes at JJ's. We're talking draft. And when JJ says a guy throws 90-91 and JJ says he doesn't throw hard,
that
bothers me.
But my point is that those guys a lot of times are the – if you can find the guys who the velocity will go significantly forward after they're drafted rather than backwards.
Which is always what scouts have always looked for.
But those guys don't get drafted generally in the first round.
And I'm saying they should, because I am scared of the high school guy throwing a hundo. And the guy that I think you are the most against on our top 100 is the one of the more notorious high school guys throwing a hundo, Lucas Giolito. So I don't want guys with present 7 fastball velocity in the draft. Give me the 5/7, the 5 now fastball who's got plenty of projection because he's athletic, because his arm works, the arm's clean, there's no giant red flags in the delivery. Give me that all day over the high school guy who's throwing the snot out of it every pitch, showcase style. But that's just a philosophical difference between the two of us.
Now, see, I don't think there's as much difference there as you think in that, but you would say you would not say the same thing with college guys, would you?
Generally. But I mean, I still want some projection in my college guy. I don't want them to be finished projects when they're 21 years old. I want some polish, but I don't want finish. You want some player development. I mean, that's not crazy, is it?
By the way, along those lines, though, the other guy who you said a guy who I expect to see, we have run Vladimir Guerrero Jr. up really high on that list. He's 16.
He's not high enough. Probably.
I think, yes. I mean, the thing about it is we're trying to be conservative with this.
We're probably going to lose Cody Bellinger.
Yes. Cody has basically, he has essentially prohibited the Dodgers from sending him down by becoming like one of their best hitters from the day he arrived.
The other jump-up guy, you're talking about Latin American third baseman, Rafael Devers. We're probably almost a little light on Rafael Devers at 14, but again, we didn't want to overreact. He was already in our top 20.
First month was a great month, but at the same time, again, mid-season,
yeah.
I absolutely, those two guys, but if you told me mid-season that we are discussing Vladimir Guerrero Jr. as being 1, 2, or 3 on this list,
sure.
It would not stun me. Scouts who have seen him in Lansing just come away. This is one of those guys that you see him and you're like,
right.
I will be glad to remember that I saw him at this age.
JJ, we have Blake Rutherford on the list. He was actually a guy we debated fairly heavily. He is at 37, so he's moved up some. Who was this year's Blake Rutherford in the draft? Asks Mike Duggan. So I don't know exactly what he means by who's this year's Blake Rutherford. Maybe you mean like one of the top, but this is a good high school outfielder draft. Maybe we're looking for a high school outfielder who is bat first, like hit tool over power tool, or maybe more of a, where the hit is the best tool. That is not the case for Jordan Adele. That's not the case for Austin Beck. Those guys are very athletic. Bubba Thompson, Helio Ramos, just scrolling through our outfielders. Is that Drew Waters? Maybe that's Drew Waters.
I mean,
I don't think there's a direct comparable player to him, with the exception of Garrett Mitchell, who's similar, but again, Garrett Mitchell's more the other tools in the field of hit is the question right now, I think, with Garrett Mitchell. So I don't think there's an exact comp for Garrett.
I think that the only guy that I would say fits in that pure hit, potentially even, and I don't think he's at that same level, because we had Mickey Moe.
Calvin Mitchell. But not as athletic, I don't think, as Blake Rutherford.
We had Mickey Moe and Rutherford last year, who are these kind of hit-first.
Right.
Nothing against the power, but...
Right. I mean, the highest grade on Mickey Moniak's card, if you believed in him, was a 7-hit tool. And I think that's the same thing for Blake Rutherford.
With Rutherford, I don't see a guy...
Me neither.
There's not a guy on this who I would say on the high school side who I would give a 7-hit to. There might be... Now, if you really like him, I think there's multiple college hitters on this, even though we talk about this being a bad college, you know, but
right.
There are a number of guys who, if you really like them, you could say it's a 7-hit. Usually they're guys who you question the power a little bit, you know, on the college side.
Yeah, that's the other kind of thing we're focusing on for this mock draft I'm working on, hoping to write that tonight for tomorrow, is what do you do with these college bats? You know, the college hitters, a lot of whom are very quickly in the major leagues, but on our top 100, actually, the only college bat in the top 10, JJ, actually is Nick Senzel. The rest of these guys, it's a very heavy Latin American top 10. Moncada, mm-hmm. Torres, Gleyber Torres, Amed Rosario, Willy Adames, Ozzy Albies, Victor Robles, Alex Reyes. I mean, Alex Reyes, in New Jersey, is kind of foreign anyway, but obviously we count him as Dominican. Eloy Jimenez there at 11. The other college hitters are further down, because I think part of the reason, though, is that a lot of college hitters graduate very quickly to the major leagues. Kyle Lewis is hurt. He's down at 30. So who are the college hitters? There aren't athletic college hitters in this draft class like there were, say, 2 years ago when you had Bregman and Swanson and Benintendi, you know, shortstop, center fielder, who all shot to the major leagues and are all quickly establishing themselves as major leaguers, where Dansby's the only one who's stumbled at all, really.
Right.
This season, but this year's college draft class does have a lot of hitters that scouts do believe in, but they all play on the corners,
mm-hmm.
and that's really, I guess,
and that's
kind of the issue.
Like, you know, you start with, I mean, again, you start with Brendan McKay. Where does he end up playing? I think of him. I know that you can find guys with the hitter, but it feels like the closer we get, would you say that it's more towards the lefty?
I think it's the other way now, because he's throwing 88 to 90, and he's added a cutter. Who adds a cutter when you dominate for 2.5 years, 2.75 seasons, and he utterly owns college baseball? I've said it before, I'll say it again. He's getting ready to be the most accomplished player in college baseball history, in the Baseball America year anyway, 36 years of it. Who does that? Who just decides, oh, I'll add a pitch, and then 3 or 4 weeks later, he's relying on that pitch against Clemson?
Probably too much.
Right. So, far be it for me to criticize Louisville. Their coaches are awesome. But it's weird. It's just really weird, JJ. And as I wrote his report for the top 50 reports that are on there, We'll get 50 more, hopefully, tomorrow. We got to write them. We got to do this Facebook Live, and then we got to write our reports. But as we build up to the BA 500, read the Brendan McKay report for subscribers. As I wrote it, I like the better as a hitter. I think he's got present sixes, or he's closer to present six hit power than he is close to present six fastball grade, curveball grade, cutter, or changeup. The caveat is, I think it's definitely, just talking to the scouts I've talked to, present fastball command is probably a five. You could probably throw a future six on his fastball command. That is the separator for him
as
a pitcher. That is huge. To me, that's more than a three starter. And Andy Lopez gave me this great analogy. I talked to the former Arizona and Florida and Pepperdine coach for this two-way feature we're working on, because he had Brad Wilkerson as an all-time two-way player. He said, I always put players in buckets of ones, twos, and threes. And you win with ones and threes. Ones are stars who don't act like stars. Or, I know, ones are stars who know they're stars and own the responsibility of being stars. Brad Wilkerson was a one who thought he was a three. He had the grinder mentality of a role player, which is threes. You need ones and threes. You lose with twos. Twos are guys who aren't stars but think they are. And that was his recruiting philosophy, oversimplified. And for me, Brendan McKay is a one who thinks he's a three. He thinks he's a grinder. If he's at full strength, he has one stuff, a touch of 94 lefty with solid average fastball velocity with plus life, angle, and plus command. Plus, add on to that, is above average a plus curveball and feel for using the changeup when he throws it. And there's a little more to come as he gives away, as he gives up position playing and focuses on pitching. But that's a lot of ifs to go first overall as a left-hander. Meanwhile, as a hitter, I know that he has feel for the barrel. I know that he has improved his power this year. He's shown you plus, easy plus raw. It's a beautiful swing. Hudson Belinsky, now we're talking about this last night, he's looser at the plate than he is on the mound. It's more strength-oriented on the mound. It's more a little handsy looseness at the plate. Then you see, I think that the defensive improvement at first base could be easy with pro coaching.
Right.
Focus on that. Improve base running. As I wrote it up, I lean hitter. But I don't know that there's an industry consensus. I think the teams that pick at the top, the Twins and the Reds, see him more on the mound. But I don't think that's necessarily the industry consensus. I think that's still split. That's a long answer to a short question.
After that, Pavin Smith very much fits what we're talking about. It's a
potential seven bat. I mean, that's
true. It's a hit over power corner.
And the metrics apparently are fantastic. The TrackMan data, just the way the ball comes off his bat. Then you talk to scouts who do like the swing. And again, talking to Brad Wilkerson for this story, he's in West Palm Beach. He talked about seeing Pavin Smith in high school and being like, wow, this guy's a big league hitter.
Adam Haseley, again.
I don't think anyone's going seven on him.
No. But
I'll say that for sure. But he is a plus hitter.
And again, probably into the corner. I skipped over.
I don't know if he's going to end up on a corner or not. I'll just say that. Yeah. Brad Wilkerson's my comp for him. A lot of Brad Wilkerson talk on today's Facebook Live. I'm obsessed with Brad Wilkerson right now, 20 years too late. But
I skipped over player. The guy who's definitely up the middle, Jaron Kendall.
Yes, he's not a seven hitter. He's on the opposite end of the spectrum.
Right. I mean, the question with him is going to really be...
He didn't even mention the best college hitter in the draft for me. If I'm picking one college hitter in the draft, it's Keston Hiura. Six hits, six power, bank it. I love the swing. Uses the whole field. I mean, that's why I put him 10th in the first mock draft we did. I know that was probably high. I bet he goes closer to 10 than where we have him right now at 20. Bum arm and all. I just don't see how you pass on. If you think he's the best college hitter in the draft, and I think there are going to be teams that do, just hit and power. How do you pass that guy?
Especially, well, the thing about it is...
I'm all about Keston Hiura.
I'm agreeing with you from the standpoint that his defensive questions are largely fixable.
Like I would think so, yes.
He has a bad elbow.
We can fix elbows now. We have the technology. They can make them bigger, stronger, and faster.
He needs surgery. But it's not something where you say, well, you know,
his arm's going to fall off.
Right, he can't throw.
Right.
No. And he has before this, like, again, if he's healthy... He could be a second. I mean, like,
and why can't you just play him in left field?
But
why can't he just go out
I
there?
I will give. I mean, again, it's He's not playing a position, so it's not the same thing.
Right.
But it is the Ian Happ discussion from a couple of years ago.
Somewhat, yes.
Where, okay, again, the big
it's actually
addendum,
a pretty decent comp.
The big addendum being
this guy makes a lot more
Ian
contact.
Happ was playing second and some short and some outfield. He'd done
yes.
all three, and he had two working elbows.
Right.
But there was questions. It was like, if you're taking Ian Happ, you're taking the bat, and then you say, we'll figure out the defensive position. Maybe he can stay at second.
Right.
Maybe he's in a corner in the outfield.
Best position, batter's box. That's certainly the case for Keston Hiura. He's actually kind of a, probably not quite as athletic as Ian Happ,
but
I think it's a very similar case. I think that's a good call. Let's take some reader questions. They're going to be all over the map because we've been all
that's
over
fun.
The map. Atney Maranka asks, are you guys worried about Clint Frazier yet? Answer for me is no. He's got a 780 OPS in AAA. Steady as she goes.
Here, I will give
I'm
you
not
a,
too worried about
I will give you a reason with that. You just said 780 OPS. Aaron Judge is doing pretty well right now, right?
Yeah.
Aaron Judge, who significantly last year at this time in AAA was much older
right.
than Clint Frazier.
Same draft year, but one was college, one was high school.
So at this time last year, today's the, what, 14th?
16th.
Okay, on the 16th, Aaron Judge was hitting 261, 318, 472.
Yeah, I'm not worried.
So, again, my point being, it's been a month and a half, and Clint Frazier's had some ups and downs. I do know that you can talk to scouts who do worry that his swing is not going to work without some changes.
It's high maintenance.
It's high maintenance. There's a, as he himself says, there's a significant load. There's, he's tried to tone it down. The thing about him is that the hands work so well so quickly
right.
that it's both his best strength and also kind of one of the biggest weaknesses he has is that it allows him to do some things that other hitters would not be able to do.
He's the latest Ricky Weeks example. The guy's hands were almost too fast. Joey Sinchak asks, I know there's a small sample size, but interested in your thoughts on Alex Jackson's season so far. Beyond encouraging, for
yes.
me, like Alex Jackson's basically gone from almost an NP, a non-prospect, to a prospect again. And I know he's not catching every day. He's caught back-to-back a few times lately, mostly DHing. But I don't know what the park factor is at Osceola County Stadium. It's the first year back there. You know, they haven't had
right.
a team there in a decade plus. But 10 home runs in the Florida State League is 10 home runs. Slugging nearly 600 in the Florida State League as a 21-year-old, that's significant. So the bat is playing, and he's back behind the plate, which looks like a smart move. So
it's
why did this not happen before is the real question.
It's encouraging. You do have to you do kind of wonder how much a change of scenery has really helped him.
Yes.
Getting into a new organization. That being said, I do think there are some underlying concerns that still sit there.
Mm-hmm.
One is defensive position because
yeah,
he's got a long way to go at catcher, although I do like the move to try to get him to catch some again.
Yep.
The other is that you look at the strikeout to walk
still
rate.
Still on strikeouts, yep.
And, yeah, he's hitting 300 right now, but the underlying there is that basically with a little bit different luck, it could be very much a 260 with power. The strikeout walk rates have not changed that much. He is
right.
making better contact.
Right.
Still some reason for concern, but absolutely he is definitely far beyond anything he's done as a pro before this year.
No question.
I think he's one home run away from his season high in home runs.
I believe he's one away. That's exactly right. Good call. Great call. Let's go to Ron Lieb, who asked, what's the ETA on Eloy Jimenez, and will Hap stay up or get sent back down? Eloy had that preseason shoulder problem.
His first homer last night.
I know he came back.
His first homer last night for Myrtle Beach.
If you don't already have the BA Prospect Report, sign up. It's an email newsletter. 4 or 5 paragraphs at the top on top performers and then box score lines for everybody in the prospect handbook, basically. So very quick and easy way to scan a lot of minor league box scores.
The ETA for Eloy, I would say, is you do have to remember how young this guy still is.
Right. He's 20.
And the other question becomes, I mean,
Where does he go?
Where is he playing? And, you know, what I would say is that you're talking, I would say, a 2018, some point in 2018 ETA is still a reasonable ETA. The question
right.
that does come into that, though, is because he's a corner. He's absolutely a corner.
Yes.
And really,
he's a
left fielder. He's a left fielder. They have a pretty good one of those who's really only a left fielder or if you know.
Yeah, if he gets hot. He hasn't gotten hot yet this year. But, yes, Kyle Schwarber has shown himself to be a very capable hitter. Ian Happ, JJ, 2 games, 3 hits, a home run already. He's been outstanding. Ron wants to know, when does he go back down or does he stay up?
I think if they're healthy, I think he goes back down again from the standpoint of where does he I don't see a regular place for him to play right now if everyone's healthy.
Yeah, the Cubs, to me, I still think that this calling him up is a great way to showcase him for a trade, because they are going to need starting pitching reinforcements. There's no question about it. They can't trade Jason Hayward and his four extra base hits and his contract.
No.
At least he has three home runs. I don't think they're going to trade.
Double?
Yeah, one triple, no doubles. Oh. I don't think they're going to trade, but they've already traded Matt Caesar. There is a little room there for another outfielder, but they have Jay, Hayward, and Almora, plus Schwarber. Small bench, it's just hard to see. But to me, the better Ian Happ had a great spring training, was very good in AAA, good debut so far. That just makes him more and more marketable in the right trade for the right pitcher, because that's what the Cubs really need. They don't need another infielder who can hit. They're fairly lousy with those.
And Ron Falls up, so I was asking, because the Dodgers kept Bellinger. That's a different situation, because the Dodgers have more opportunity for a guy. For one, Andrew Tolles has been lost for the season,
right,
so that helped open up.
And Bellinger's always played a little outfield.
Right.
You know, he's always played, like a couple years ago, it was 120 games at first, 20 games in center field, not even just the outfield. So him moving to the outfield is not some new thing.
No, that's kind of really one of his positions.
Right, right. We've got a lot of questions from Tank Yogubi. I hope I pronounced his name right. I'm sure I didn't. I apologize, Tank. Thinking about Hunter Green. Hunter Green, for him, obvious number one talent in the draft. Obvious number one pick, JJ.
One thing, Tank, I will disagree with you, and this is not a knock on Hunter Green, but you say five to a player. Hunter Green is not a five to a player.
Correct.
Because he doesn't run. I mean, that's... It's okay. He doesn't
right,
need
exactly.
to run. If he was a position player, you still wouldn't... You know, what you don't need from him to be a plus runner, to be an impact as a hitter.
We also had a scout say he might have the best arm on the entire planet.
Right.
He was including Aroldis Chapman in that discussion. And he does have big-time power. I don't know how... It's 70 or 80 raw power. I mean, I'm not sure
right.
how usable it's going to be.
I would say it would shock me. I know, you know, it would just shock me from the standpoint of he is special as a hitter from the power.
Yes.
And he's special because he's got that kind of power and he can play short, mainly because of, as you just said.
Kind of like a right-handed Corey Seager kind of guy with more power and less field to hit. I mean, that's really
with
really what we're talking about. But less field to hit is the essence.
But the crazy part about that I'll go old here, but with a Sean Dunstan arm at short.
Right, yeah.
I mean,
Seager's got a great arm, but it's not the best arm on the planet.
Sean Dunstan
did have the best arm.
I always
arm on the
go back to Sean Dunstan.
The ball looked like it was shot out of a railgun every time he...
That nicely done. But Sean Dunstan, if you're young enough to not remember Sean Dunstan,
look him up.
Sean Dunstan was a guy to me who, Cubs games were on WGN.
Oh, yeah.
And
in the daytime.
It was shocking because he threw at a different velocity than anyone else
in the game. And that was 30 years ago.
I mean, and since then, Rafael Furcal had a great arm when he was young.
He was close,
but
it
wasn't
Dunstan.
Sean Dunstan. And I think Hunter Green could be that. But I say that all to say, the reason you hear Hunter Green 1, 2, 3, and I feel like his floor, short of there being negotiating issues or whatever on how much he's going to make.
I still think his floor is 3.
It feels like that's about his floor. We're talking about that as a pitcher because, as you said, Tank, it's not just a guy who's touched 100. It's a guy who's touched 100, and he does it not relatively. For a guy who throws 100, he does it very easy.
Right.
And that's why there's some questions about, how consistent the breaking ball is, all that. But that's why he is in that,
It's Tank Yakubi, who says his dad knew Dunstan, Brooklyn kid. So signed by Billy Blitzer, longtime scout for the Cubs. And a guy that's fun to read about, one of these veteran Cubs scouts who got their ring last year finally. Philip Kemp Brown finally asks, thoughts on A.J. Puck this year? I feel like we've answered this every Facebook Live, so the thoughts are, glad to see him off to a good start. 49 strikeouts. A strikeout to walk is great. I really wouldn't worry about anything else. It's so early. But it says that the stuff has been good, and that's very encouraging for AJ.
It has been encouraging. It's tailed off a little bit. The thing with him is that, and you understand it, but long-term with AJ Puck, because he's up to, last two starts, he's gone 5 innings. You talked about this last year when we were talking about the draft. When we talk about starters, and you talk about being
about
able
this
to...
Just on this Facebook Live,
right,
I know
say,
the starters.
But A.J. Puck is the embodiment of a guy who, if you set a question, if he's going to be eventually that horse that guy who's not the guy who you try to get five innings out of and then turn it over to the pen.
Right.
But
those five inning starts are his longest of the year. That's progress.
Right. That goes back to at Florida, he had the same issue. I mean,
right.
And Florida was not a team that would not let a guy go because the guy was a little bit more efficient and all that. It was not like
Logan Shore and Alex Faedo on the same roster rotation were going deeper into games. And AJ and Logan Shore, by the way, I thought a good start for the A's as well. I'm nothing but encouraged by AJ Puck. Really, I'm nothing but encouraged. He's had one or two really bad starts. Otherwise, strike percentage is good. You know, it's high A. He's gone straight to high A, and he's fairly dominated. So, I'm very encouraged. To me, that's as good a start as the A's could have asked for. Last but not least, Jack Cecil asked, "Do you think scouts and analysts differ on opinion in regard to Brett Rooker?" We try to reflect what the scouts are telling us because we are analysts of the information. We're not scouts. So I would say we have Brett Rooker. Where do we have him in our top 200?
He's in the – he is where he is right now. I think he's going to move up again when we re-rank, but he is 64.
64 is – I think that's actually a pretty good spot for him. That's like a back of the second round ranking. He'll probably go a little higher than that. I still have my questions about him. You know, there's apparently the arm strength is below par. So even though he's mobile for his size, you'd think maybe he could move to the outfield. Honestly, in a lot of ways, JJ, he sounds – he kind of reminds me – even when I watch him swing, he kind of reminds me of Chris Colabello. I think he's better than that.
I love the guy.
Exactly. I think he's better than that. Like, Colabello has played first base mostly. I know they've tried him in the outfield.
But he's a first baseman.
He's a first baseman. That's kind of why I say that about Rooker. I do think Rooker's going to keep getting dinged because he's a fourth-year junior who redshirted – but the power is the power. The performance is the performance. The analytics are what they are. He dominates the Southeastern Conference in a way that I've never seen anybody do. And 400, 508, 879, as many walks. He does have a lot of swing and miss, 40 strikeouts and 190 at-bats. But he's getting Barry Bonds treatment, JJ. He's getting walked. Apparently this weekend, Georgia walked him with first and second and nobody out. They didn't like the matchup, so they walked him.
Because on Friday, he had already basically hit one halfway to...
halfway to the gymnastics gym.
I was going to say halfway to Watkinsville. I was going to go a little local flavor there.
Was it Loganville? Is that what used to be the
Where
capital?
Where is Loganville?
Yeah, there you go. But that was like the capital, I think, of Georgia, wasn't it? Milledgeville was the capital. A little Georgia history for you.
Where he was hitting it, he was hitting it away from Miller.
I'm sorry.
I was kind of going in the direction of, you know.
You know the Georgia geography better than I do. I just have a little Georgia history. To me, Brett Rooker's going to be a second-round pick, and he's hit his way that way. I don't see him being a first-round pick, but this draft's already crazy enough with college first baseman. We just mentioned McKay, maybe.
Evan White's
Haven
a guy.
Smith,
I mean, like
Evan White, exactly. And the last time that happened, the 2008 draft, that wasn't a good draft. And that was a draft, I think we wrote about at the time, first baseman, I wrote the feature, and I was like, man, this is going to be a crazy first round for first baseman. How's that going to happen? And we've never had a draft before or since.
I'm foreshadowing here as he looks it up. Avert your eyes, I do believe, if I remember right on this.
You know, it's weird. It's Hosmer. The second guy was Yonder Alonso, who's finally figuring it out this year, which is pretty interesting.
Almost a decade later, but it's kicking
Justin on. Smoke. Disappointment.
No.
Brett Wallace.
No.
Disappointment. David Cooper.
No.
Ike Davis. No. Mm. And he actually got there. Alan Dykstra, unfortunately, absolutely not. The next college out, I'm just looking to see if there's anybody who snuck in later in this draft. The answer is not really. Future indie ball star, CJ Ziegler. Xavier Scruggs in the 19th round. Mashing in KBO, I believe. Trying to be the right-handed Eric
Bates. So that's a cautionary tale.
That draft is a cautionary tale for all these college first basemen in this year's draft, but none of these guys hit like Brent Rooker hit.
The other thing I'll say with that is that.
Hashtag Rooker Show.
This may be dumb, but I'll throw it out there anyway because I think there's at least a certain amount,
of
intelligence to it, which is that I do wonder what Will Craig and Will Craig's very immediate struggles
in pro ball at all
are going to affect because Will Craig was drafted in the first round last year.
Yeah.
And he was drafted in the first round almost entirely based on, that was an analytics pick.
Yeah. And
from the standpoint of, if you graded him out, he pitched too, which
right.
added a little to his, I was like, hey, I like the arm.
If you believed in him, you believed he had a chance to play third base. I want to believe in Will Craig. I've thought of too many scouts who don't. I want to believe in the guy. I love the guy's makeup. I love that his how you know he just kind of played the game. He was a ball player last year. You know,
he was a guy who thought he was a three.
That's right. He thought he was a three, and he was really a one in college baseball. I'm stealing that, Coach Lopez. Sorry.
But we talked about Alex Jackson hitting 11 home runs.
Yeah.
You know, 11 home runs.
Will Craig in the Florida State League has?
Two.
That's more than I thought he had.
And the thing about it is the other thing that's disconcerting is that when Will Craig was drafted, if you liked him, you thought, you hoped that the arm would allow him to stay at third, even though
he
didn't move all that well and all that. But it was like, you know what? Hopefully this will keep him there.
Yeah.
Or at least you hoped it would get him really close to the big leagues before.
Kind of like Colin Moran defensively at third base.
I mean, we cited Brett Wallace.
He doesn't control the strike zone either, does he, in pro ball? Not like he did in college.
He's playing only first base. He is walking, but it's also 28 Ks in 150. So it's not brutal.
The guy in this draft who's actually Will Craig's analog and gets comped to Will Craig all the time is Jake Berger. Jake Berger at Missouri State.
Who also is hitting. I will say with him, if there is a difference, I feel like teams may be a little bit more comfortable with his long-term power potential than they were with Craig.
I think so. I'm not quite sure why, because he also had no home runs last summer with the USA national team, just like Craig struggled with Team USA. Rooker hit for some power in the Cape, hit over 300. Also, the walk strikeout wasn't good. So, to me, Rooker is one of the hardest guys to peg in the draft. And there's no, I'm not sure even who you comp him to, because we just never see anybody do what he's doing, who's also a fourth-year junior and a right-handed hitter. But there is some athleticism there. I think he's a better athlete, honestly, than Will Craig.
I
kind of believe in him. I kind of believe
you
in
know
him.
I'm kind of sold.
Yeah, no, so fun stuff, great questions. We're here every Tuesday at facebook.com/baseballamericamag. Thank you for tuning in today. Today's podcast and Facebook Live were sponsored by Baseballism. Visit baseballism.com for the best apparel in baseball and enter the code BA2017 to save 20% off your order. For J.J. Cooper and his Baseballism hat, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you in the next Baseball America Facebook Live and next podcast. So long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit baseballamerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.